automobile. You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing underground into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a lifetime. Water flowing underground.
And you may ask,
you're hearing Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, live from somewhere deep below the earth on Premier Radio Networks.
Well, they found a new species of monkeys in Tanzania. Just unbelievable. Here we are, 2005, and they're still finding brand new creatures, brand new things on this planet that they just never knew existed before. Such is the case with lost technology. Jonathan Gray has sent us, by the way, some phenomenal images up there on the coasttocoastam.com website that indicate the use of technologies in ancient past. Now, some of you who have a computer, take a look at some of the pictures there of some of these images. One includes a 2,000-year-old lens. That's right. And you can view some more of those images on the website. In a moment, our guest, Jonathan Gray, on Coast to Coast AM. International explorer, archaeologist, and author Jonathan Gray has traveled the world to gather data on ancient mysteries. Over the past 37 years, he has penetrated some largely unexplored areas, including parts of the Amazon headwaters. He also led expeditions to the bottom of the sea and to remote mountain and desert regions of the world. In the course of his explorations, Jonathan began to uncover evidence of surprising out-of-place artifacts. According to what he was taught at school, these were impossible. They simply should not exist. And these were not just isolated anomalies. There was a global pattern to them, suggesting an ancient worldwide civilization of astonishing proportions. His book, Dead Man's Secrets, catalogs more than 1,000 evidences of a lost super science and technology, including dozens of achievements ahead of our day. He's our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you, George. I'm thrilled to be on again to speak with you. I appreciate your invitation. Thank you.
It's been a little over a year. Can you believe how quickly time flies?
It doesn't seem that long, George.
No,
it certainly goes faster every day you live.
Hey, I've got to tell you that I am so fascinated by your subject matter and some of the things you've investigated. I was just so fortunate that we were able to get you back when we have here, Jonathan. If we can, let's talk a little bit about some of this lost technology. But more importantly, how you started stumbling across it. Tell us the story.
Well, I suppose it began when I was only 10 years old, George. I was reading magazines about explorers and lost cities and so on. It always had fascinated me since as far as I can remember. And then I read about the British explorer Fawcett, who went into the Amazon jungle and came out with wild tales of pygmies with blowpipes and poison darts that were guarding a city choked in vines and jungle. And he reported this to a British scientific organization, and then he returned to South America to try to obtain hard evidence of what he was talking about, and he vanished. That was about 1925 or thereabouts, George.
He and vanished? Just, what do you mean he vanished?
He was never heard. He and his son went in, and they just disappeared. Nothing more was heard of them.
Oh, my.
I'm not surprised, though, George, because in that jungle, you can get lost and think you're never coming out. That's happened to me a few times.
Did it scare you?
Yes, it's more scary than the wild man or the wild beasts or the insects or the piranhas or the whatever. To think that you're lost, a compass will not help you because the jungle is so thick. You can be just 10 feet away from a swirling river and not even hear it because the sound is soaked up by the jungle.
Oh, my God. Okay, so there you are in a jungle looking for things. Are you alone? Do you have a team with you when these were going on?
Well, on this first occasion I can think of when I was really frightened, I had a half caste, Ecuadorian, half native, half Ecuadorian, soldier given me by the Ecuadorian government. He carried a rifle, the only weapon that my party had. It was only myself, the only person who could speak English. He could speak native and he could also speak Spanish. And the other two people on the team were two natives from a nearby village. It was a two-day journey to get their services. And the military outpost that was in a clearing in the middle of the jungle sent out some soldiers to recruit two carriers for me. And these men came out and they became my carriers right through the journey.
Well, Jonathan, did you know what you were looking for, or were you just exploring?
Well, I was looking for lost cities. This man, Fawcett, really captured my imagination, and I guess I was ambitious, George. I wanted to pick up where he left off and see what went wrong.
Well, but how do you start looking for something that's lost?
You read up all you can about it first. Every source, every report, true or false, and you try to sift the true from the false and then say, okay, where do I start? What do I get? How am I going to get in? What equipment do I need? What dangers will I face? And if so, how am I going to trade my way out or talk my way out of these? And first of all, you ensure that you can get in, that you can get out again, and then you start thinking, now, what am I going to look for?
So even though some of these stories could have been myths, there might be some truth to it, and you try to digest that, Jonathan, try to sort through these things you hear to try to figure out, okay, what's the best spot, what's the best region I need to go in to begin to investigate? Is that how that works?
Exactly. That's true.
Okay. Some of the lost technology that you have illustrated, that you've sent us, and of course that is in your book, Dead Man's Secrets. Tell us about this, because you've provided us some things that are quite frankly startling that they existed thousands of years ago. As you began to uncover some of this, I mean, what did you first of all think? I mean, did you try to rule out the fact that maybe, like the lens that you sent us a picture of, that maybe it was 20 years old and somehow was found in this region and couldn't be that old?
Yes, it does enter your mind. I actually began to see these anomalies, not only things that I was stumbling over, George, but reports from so many other people. At first, it was just one or two, and I pushed them aside because I had focused on other things. And as I continued investigating these other things, more anomalies began to pop up until it was no longer an isolated thing that you could just dismiss. But apparently there was something here that had to be taken notice of, and it turned into hundreds, then into thousands, perhaps even tens of thousands. And I could see here there's a gap in our knowledge. People have to know about this. It got me so excited I just had to sit down and collate it. And eventually Dead Men's Secrets came as a result of that. That was over 35 countries of research.
Jonathan, Michael Cremo writes in his book, Forbidden Archaeology, that past civilizations could be millions of years old on this planet. Some of the artifacts that you found, of course, are thousands of years old. And, you know, that's pretty dramatic all by itself. But do you think at all that his thoughts, his theories of past civilizations on this planet being millions of years old could be possible?
Well, I don't like to get into speculation, George. I know that it's very nice to think and wonder about millions of years back, and there are lots of theories concerning that. But as an archaeologist, I have to keep my head out of the air and my feet on the ground, and I go for evidence. Archaeology is about physical evidence, and I would say evidence does not take us back more than thousands. When you get beyond that, we're getting into speculation, and his speculation, man, I love the man and I love what he's doing, and the world needs to be shaken up, and if it wasn't for Michael Cremo, half the world wouldn't know what they do know now. And I support Michael in every way, but I would say, let him go to that part of it. I'll stick to the evidence, and the evidence goes okay. Back thousands anyway.
Okay, and would you say thousands? Roughly how far back?
I'd say the furthest back you can really go is about 5,000 as far as solid history goes, solid evidence and confirmed evidence that you can prove dates for.
Okay, let's use that tonight then as a possible beginning point of 5,000 years. At that point, some of the speculation again, and I know you're not going to go there, but with the science that you've uncovered, what does a planet look like about 5,000 years ago, and what regions of the planet are we talking about?
Well, we're looking at a planet that was disturbed in that period, in that millennium, with a great worldwide disaster, George. I have no doubt about that whatsoever, because the clocks were reset, and there are so many ways that if we had time to talk about that, where we can actually pinpoint that millennium as being a time when a civilization was wiped out and a new beginning took place.
You've got 3 hours with me today, Jonathan. You've got all the time in the world.
Okay.
So we're talking about 3000 BC, basically, right?
Roughly that, yeah.
Okay. In your opinion, what kind of calamity might have occurred?
Well, it was a disaster in which the planet was tilted on its axis and its orbit was altered. And it was an earth-changing, ecology-changing disaster that probably affected every square inch of our planet. And the civilizations that came up after that began at the top, not at the bottom. They began with all the knowledge to start with that had been passed on by the survivors from the previous civilization.
I would guess that in order for this planet to undergo some kind of major orbital change, we had to have been hit by something.
Yes, I do believe that we have an outside force involved here. Velikovsky was rather much on the mark, I believe, when he said that the Earth could not tilt on its axis from its own power within itself. Anything that occurred on the planet itself could not tip it on its axis, nor change the orbit. It would have to be an outside force, such as a flyby a comet or something else, that would have tilted the Earth on its axis and would have caused such a breaking up of the crust of the Earth that thousands of volcanoes would have burst out. Great underground water basins would have exploded to the surface, and the former canopy that was similar to Venus that was around our Earth at that time and gave us a nice climate from pole to pole was disrupted and collapsed on the Earth. And it was just a convulsion in which seas and continents were turned up together.
What would have happened to human life, what would have happened to animal life on this planet, Jonathan, 5,000 years ago when this catastrophe occurred?
It would have been a total wipeout except for those that were ready for it.
Like they might have had some advanced knowledge about it?
Yeah. Well, if there was a total wipeout, I would say there must have been some, because we're here today.
Well, but, unless we came from other sources, which is a possibility.
Well, I do know that's a theory, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we're getting back probably to the 600 legends worldwide in all our nations, from North America, South America, Australia, Asia, Africa, the Pacific Islands, all stating that there was a global catastrophe of water and fire. Fire came first, then the water, and I guess this is where the story of Noah's Ark comes into the picture.
Is it possible that maybe some huge asteroid plummeted into the planet, landed into the ocean, and not only, you know, created some catastrophe in terms of fire planet-wide, but also major flooding just because of the tsunami that might have occurred when this thing would splash into the ocean?
Well, we know what a tsunami can do, don't we?
Oh, exactly.
I would think, George, that there is good evidence that it was even greater than that, the disaster. I'm not dismissing that an asteroid may have come crashing in, quite possibly. But it's bigger than this, that the whole crust of the Earth was ripped to shreds. And you've got the Great African Rift, a rift that goes three-quarters of the way around the world, for example.
All right, these regions that we're talking about, where there were civilizations prior to the catastrophe, would have been where? Throughout the entire planet or primarily in Africa?
Throughout the whole planet, pretty well, I would say. There's evidence of buried civilization in Australia, North America, Europe, Africa, Asia, it's a pretty much a global thing.
In your opinion, what kind of intelligence are we talking about on the planet 5,000 years ago? Obviously, if they had some high technology, they knew some things.
Oh, yes. We have people. We have actually a legend. I'm going to start with a legend, then get down to some evidence, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely, yeah.
We have a legend passed down to the survivors who wrote books in India, stating that the previous population had warning that this was going to happen, and they were hoping and planning to rocket privileged people off the planet to escape it. Now, we don't know what happened to those so-called privileged people, but we know that they must have had the technology to even consider it.
And how would they have known, unless maybe somebody told them?
Somebody must have told them, yeah.
Could have seen something coming this way. They probably couldn't alter it. But they probably predicted, as we have now a near-Earth tracking system. We were looking at an asteroid, for example, Jonathan, that's going to come very close to the planet. Originally, they thought it might hit us, but it's going to come very close to the planet 2029. So that's a 17-year jump. Maybe if this planet was being monitored by extraterrestrials, they might have warned some of the people that, hey, folks, 10, 15, 30 years out, this is going to happen. Is it possible it could have occurred that way?
Well, that is a possibility, George. We're getting back to the legends of the world here again, where they all pretty much agree that there was advance warning given. And the legends virtually will say that God chose right living people to be the survivors so that they could give mankind a better start because the world was about to destroy itself with violence and world wars. You know what I mean?
Yes. And would you think that this advance warning then may have come a little more directly as opposed to some kind of spiritual or divine intervention?
Could have been a combination of both, George.
Well, that's true too.
Certainly there was enough time to prepare. And the knowledge was given that it was going to be a waterborne disaster because a ship was prepared at least. And animals, in other words, representative animal life was preserved along with it. So, I mean, it couldn't have, these creatures could not have survived without some kind of protection. And such protection was prepared.
These high civilizations around the planet then, would you, based on some of the things you've uncovered, could you assume that these civilizations around the planet were all pretty much technologically advanced at about the same rate?
It would appear to be so, yeah. Down in Australia, something similar has been found underground to what's been found in the United States, evidence of perhaps of motor technology, machinery, and so on.
What was found in Australia? This is fascinating.
Yes, down in the coal mines of the Hunter Valley in New South Wales, a miner has told me that he was involved in a discovery 400 feet below the surface of the earth some time ago, and it looked like very similar to what was found in California, some kind of device, electrical device, resembling a modern spark plug that we have in motor cars.
Generally, then, though, what has happened? So we found some small things. Where's the big stuff? They must have had big technology, big devices, heavy machinery. What happened to this stuff?
I do have some pictures. I should have perhaps emailed one for your website, George. It's enormous. It's a piece of machinery that I can't identify, neither has anyone who's seen it. It was found in the United States. It's got a picture of a dumpster right next to it, which is dwarfed by it, and it was found on a military compound where excavation was being done for underground tunnels, and there were several of them found, and they were, after being photographed, they were buried. I have got one photograph of it.
Any speculation on its age?
No, except that it was probably buried about the same time as the disaster that buried all the other hundreds of miles away.
So thousands of years old as well.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you can definitely send that to Lex at lex@coast2coastam.com, just like you sent some of the other images.
I'd be pleased to.
Okay, and maybe, Lex, you can get those up while we're conducting our chat with Jonathan tonight. I mean, this is fascinating. So the civilizations, for example, in Egypt, Samaria, and other areas all appeared suddenly, and then they simply disappeared suddenly? Was it that fast?
They appeared very suddenly and disappeared fairly steadily, gradually.
All right, let's talk about that when we come back, Jonathan. Fascinating. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Sign up now for Streamlink, now with podcasting. Get it today at coasttocoastam.com.
You are doing an absolutely superb job sponsoring young children, helping them out. My goal is 50 a day until we reach that level of 500 Children International. You can do that by helping out. Go to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at the letter there that I've posted. But also on the left-hand side of the screen, a yellow banner. It's flashing. Click that. You'll be able to sponsor a child that way or call this toll-free number. If you don't have a computer, and some of you don't, 1-800-869-9863. That's 1-800-869-9863, or click the yellow banner on the coasttocoastam.com website. Jonathan Gray, our guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan, can you tell us a little bit about the lens picture that you supplied us on the coasttocoastam.com website? Where was that found?
It's found in a Libyan tomb west of Egypt, dated to about 2000 BC.
Looks like it was made from glass, right?
Yes, from glass. In fact, there have been other lenses found in different places too. One was found in the Northern Territory of Australia. One's been found on the seabed off the coast of Ecuador in the remains of a drowned city. One's been found in Asia. We're not finding a lot of those. They're very small things, but there's enough to see that there was a consistent knowledge of the laws of optics. And, George, it appears to me that if you've got a lens, it's used either to magnify something that's big or magnify something that's small. In other words, telescopes or optical microscopes.
That's
right. The next step.
That's right, one or the other. And did it look like it might have fit inside some kind of a tube or anything like that?
Well, it's possible. You don't just have a lens made for nothing. And I do believe that if we go to some ancient drawings, which will complement this, you can go across to South America and see on ancient engravings somebody looking through a long tube at the stars. Then you have, for example, the Nazca lines, which many of our listeners probably have heard of.
In Peru.
Down in Peru, yes. And there's a spider there. You can only see it from the air, of course, George, and you look at the spider and you'll see it's copulating. It's in a form in which a spider can only... it's only one spider that does that. It's a South American spider that is in that particular shape in the form of copulation. And it can only be seen with a microscope. Now, for this to be seen and discovered by modern science and to be known only to be seen with a microscope suggests that these people knew more than we give them credit for.
You know, that's a good point, and I did not know that at all. That is a pretty dramatic point, to tell you the truth. The theory of these high civilizations, tell me, in your opinion, Jonathan, what you think they were and how they lived, and then what happened.
The original Mother X civilization, would you be referring to before the Great Event?
Yes.
Okay. I believe we're looking at a technology that is in many ways in advance of our own day, George. Because, and we can judge it largely by the state of Egypt when it first sprang up with no predecessor to speak of that we could find. And the same with the Sumerians and the Indus Valley civilization and the Mayans and the Northwestern European civilization. These all sprang up roughly at the same time, round about 3000 BC, all of them with no evidence of any transition whatsoever between their civilization and any primitive forebears, and with very many common points which suggested they all came from a common beginning. Now, that's the common beginning that we're looking for.
Okay.
A beginning that had electric light. I'm talking this now only by extrapolating from what we can see after the event. That these five civilizations sprang up with these things. Electricity, the knowledge of flight, the use of machinery, the very highest medical knowledge and tools to operate on their patients with modern technology desires like we have today to achieve certain things which we can only do today. Tunnel building systems, which we're only beginning to achieve now, tunnels that can go for hundreds of miles, with glassy walls in many places, and I've been down into some of these myself. You have also the knowledge of atoms, the knowledge of mathematics and fractions of mathematics that go down to the 1,000th part of a second, which suggests that these people not only were able to calculate to that degree, but they must have had a reason for calculating it. What were they trying to measure? Today, the only equivalent is the splitting of an atom and the speed with which atomic reactions take place.
Well, is it possible that this catastrophe might have been a worldwide atomic war or something like that?
There are legends that a world war was in progress, George, at the same time, and that this war was interrupted by the great disaster.
Ah, interrupted. Okay. Now, with the technology that we're talking about, do you believe the Egyptians used this high technology to build the pyramids?
I do believe the pyramids were built with high technology, yes. What I was taught at school is just a fable. And you were probably taught the same.
Yes.
That they used thousands and thousands of slaves pulling along with ropes up a long, long ramp. And, oh boy, you'd need more material in the ramps than you would in the pyramid. So what's the point of it?
You said that it appeared that these high civilizations just appeared suddenly, already developed, no evidence of primitive beginnings. So how do you explain that?
Well, I can only explain it, George, by the suggestion here that these people began where the pre-flood civilization left off, and that the survivors had a knowledge of the world that they were escaping from, or being rescued from, which they passed on to their descendants as they began to multiply and set up new civilizations again, Egypt, Indus Valley, Sumeria, and so on.
Do you believe these were Earthlings, or did they come from some other place in the universe?
By the relics they've left behind, there's a clear pattern of a human type of creation here in this. I don't think we have to go off the earth to find the intelligence nor the methods of technology that we find.
Okay, for them to possess the kind of technology they had, though, to me, it indicates that there must have been some pattern of growth of knowledge especially, yet you continue to say, and this is what's fascinating, that it seemed like a sudden appearance. So what did you mean by sudden?
What I'm looking at here is Egypt, say, for a start. Egypt sprang into existence fully developed with a fantastic ready-made high society. You've got enormous temples, great cities, pyramids of overwhelming size, colossal statues with tremendous expressive power at the very start of Egyptian history. Luxurious tunnels and tombs, streets paved like our streets today, flanked with magnificent sculptures, sewage systems, a decimal system at the very start, a ready-made writing at the very beginning, a court system which shows all the indications of well-defined precedence, an army, a civil service, all minutely organized, even specialist classes, all at the very beginning.
Now, what is that?
This, it was not something they had to think up slowly, but it was already there in their minds when they started it.
What does that tell you, then? How did this happen?
It tells me that these were the survivors of something that had been wiped out that had these things.
Aha. Okay. And those civilizations might have taken some longer time periods to evolve.
Yes, of course.
Okay. And then maybe that's where Cremo comes in terms of that time period of a million years or so.
Well, Cremo's got an interesting point there, George. And as I said, I support the man in his book and everything. I love what he's doing. I think here we're getting into theories and speculation. And, you know, it hasn't really taken us long. Let's look back here in our own day. The Industrial Revolution started about 300 years ago, would it be? Something like that?
Well, you know what? Yeah, maybe 200.
All right, 200. That's even faster. Look how far we've come, George, in just 200 years. If the human intelligence is there and the creativeness is there, there's really not much to stop mankind advancing pretty fast if he's intelligent already.
Well, that's true. And as a matter of fact, the real push was just the past 100 years. You know, the 1900s is when things really started to grow and explode to the point where it seems like they magnify themselves all the time. You're absolutely right. In the past, that same kind of growth of evolution could have occurred as well. As we get into some of this other discussions, underground tunnels and what have you, the thing that keeps cropping up, though, Jonathan, is, okay, was this catastrophe so big that it obliterated all the technology? Where did it go? Is it buried thousands of feet under the surface? Where is it?
Oh, that's a very good question. I love that. look at the American coal fields. In the last 100 or 200 years, amazing things have been found down coal mines. We're just within stone's throw from where you are, George. We have, for example, bells that have been found deep in coal, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet down. And you can ring those bells today. They're still as good as they were when they were buried. Iron pots, gold chains. Down in Philadelphia, there was a mine which went down, I think it was about 3 kilometres, 2 miles mm-hmm. down below the surface of the ground. And when the workmen were tunnelling horizontally from that distance down, they came slap bang against a man-made wall with polished like glass with hieroglyphics on it. Now, in my thinking, that can only have been a victim of that great disaster. I mean, if you've got 3 kilometres of stuff piled over the top of you, which was forests buried and burning while they were being washed into place, you've got a great disaster. In other words, a man-made technology destroyed in disaster that wipes out the forests and just wipes out the surface of the earth at the same time.
And buries everything.
Buries everything.
So there could be, theoretically, a couple miles below the surface, there could be buried planes, there could be buried ships. Who knows what's there?
Who knows, yes. In fact, George, ships have been found deep inside mountains.
You're kidding me.
Yeah. There was a ship found in a mine in Peru a few years ago, way in underneath the Andes Mountains.
And the only way it could get in there was to have been buried in there, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. But another one was found in Switzerland, and this was way in under a mountain, and there were men inside it, chained. Probably galley slaves of some sort, if they had them in those days. They were chained to their boat, and the mountain was over the top of them.
It was sudden. Whatever happened was pretty instant, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Evidently.
Jeez, this is just... why doesn't mainstream media pick this up? These are incredible stories.
Well, it's like a lot of things that are not popular in today's theory, which reigns through the media and the schools. There's an entrenched view that history happened a second way. I mean, we're familiar with what we were taught in school, and that's the only way that's allowed to be taught in the schools. Anything which will challenge that is going to challenge it's going to challenge reputations, degrees, financial grants, and the education system itself.
Jonathan, where does Atlantis fit into this scheme here?
Well, that always interests me, George, and have studied it a little bit, and I think there are two ways of looking at it. There are similarities to the Atlantis story, similar to the story of the global flood, if we compare it with the flood legends. It may be a version of the pre-world flood, but my opinion really is that it's something that happened after that. There have been a lot of geological upheavals since the Great Flood. There has been an adjustment. If the Earth was tipped on its axis and everything was thrown out of alignment and everything was out of balance in that great disaster, there would be hundreds of years of a settling down, realignment process taking place. And there does appear to be evidence of violent centuries after the disaster. The people of Egypt, Sumeria, Indus Valley would have heard of these disasters because they were occurring in the early parts of their civilization while the earth was still settling down in many areas. And one of those events would have been the raising of the Andes. Maybe we can talk about that later on. There was a city 12,000 feet above sea level now that used to be a seaport.
And it just got pushed up.
It got pushed up. And by the way, you may be aware that in the tsunami of December 26 last year,
right?
Was it the Straits of Sunda that goes through that part of the world north of Sumatra? I think so. There were areas where that seabed was raised 4,000 feet.
And they're talking today that the entire planet was shaken when this occurred.
Yes. Now, Atlantis could very well have gone down in such a disaster after the flood. It could have been a post-flood civilization contemporaneous with Egypt, Greece, and these others that went under at the time when one of these adjustments was taking place. I'm quite happy to accept that because I know these adjustments were happening.
Have you read some of the works of Zachariah Sitchin?
I have, yes.
Well, and he believes that the Sumerians, of course, tell an incredible story of visitation and chaos. It's all very possible. All of this is related to each other.
Yes, there must be connections here. We've got a situation where there was a world that was wiped out, and then our world, which was left as a wreck, and through, from which adjustments have been taking place ever since. Beautiful world still we have, but nothing like it must have been beforehand.
Yeah, I keep thinking, Jonathan, what would happen if some kind of catastrophe hit us now and only a few of us was we were left. I couldn't build a rocket ship. I couldn't build a car. You know, I'd have to use whatever devices were still around, if possible. So it's very conceivable that if something happened to an ancient intelligent technology and civilization, that the survivors, you know, merely had a few things that they could use and tap into. That's very possible, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it certainly is. And I would think that Egypt, Sumeria, and these other civilizations that sprang up later, wonderful as they were just an echo, a very feeble echo of the world that had been before.
These survivors, Jonathan, of the catastrophe, how did they make it? How did they survive? Might they have been in tunnels? And again, like you were talking about, some of them may have been forewarned, but those may have left. What happened to these people?
Well, we do find the remains of people all over the world buried, just like this technology we find buried. Certainly, bodies are being found all over the world. There was one up in, I think it was Virginia. I was given this report third-hand, and Virginia, I think, is the place where it was found. There was, are there coal mines up in Virginia?
Yes, I believe there are.
Okay, I think it is Virginia we're talking about. And this is reported by coal miners in a mine over that way.
What did they find?
Who came into an air pocket way deep under the coal, hundreds of feet down. And in the ceilings... Are we getting into some music now for a break?
No, that's okay. What did they find?
Okay, they found the remains of humans in the ceilings mixed up in the coal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just blended right in.
Blended right in with the coal. In other words, there was a civilization of people destroyed at the same time as the trees that were buried over them.
Something happened, Jonathan. Back in a moment, right after the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM.
Miss part of the show? Listen online with Streamlink. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.